Today is February 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. What do we know about who has been detained in Myanmar a day after the military took control?
The military didn't release any kind of statement about who they have arrested or now who has whereabouts they are or their situation. There's no clear announcement came out.
Plus, the WHO shares some good news about the COVID-19 pandemic and technology to help farmers in Africa. We'll have these stories and more next. Myanmar's military seized control of the country on Monday under a state of emergency set to last 1 year and detained senior politicians, including the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. The military takeover follows days of concern as troops had been increasing their presence in the streets. U.S. President Joe Biden says that the United States will take immediate review of sanctions law and take appropriate action. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric.
The Secretary General strongly condemned the detention of Don Aung San Suu Kyi, the state counselor, as well as President U Win Myint and other political leaders. And that was obviously on the eve of the opening session of Myanmar's new parliament. Mr. Guterres said he expressed his grave concern regarding this declaration of the transfer of all legislative, executive, and judicial powers to the military. These developments represent a serious blow to democratic reforms in Myanmar. The Secretary General stresses that the November 8th general election provide a strong mandate for the National League for Democracy, reflecting the clear will of the people of Myanmar to continue on their hard-won path to democratic reform. Mr. Guterres urges the military leadership to respect the will of the people of Myanmar and adhere to democratic norms, with any differences to be resolved peaceful dialogue. All leaders must act with the greater interest of democratic reform, engaging in meaningful dialogue, refraining from violence, and fully respecting human rights and fundamental freedoms.
The United Nations also fears the military's actions will worsen the plight of some 600,000 Rohingya Muslims still in the country. Now, to get a complete picture of where things stand, I spoke with VOA Burmese Service Chief Tan Luen Tun.
Yes, we believe that Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint, they are under house arrest in Naypyidaw, we believe that, together with the other key member of the cabinet there. There's a chief minister of the state and divisions, altogether 14 of them. They've been taken, so they are not under house arrest. They've been taken to somewhere. But the problem is that since the military didn't release any kind of statement about who they have arrested or now who has whereabouts they are or their situation, there's no clear announcement came out. So the only thing is what we know is that for the state and division, chief ministers are taken from their home, they're being arrested, and of course, there's no, we don't hear anything from the NLD leadership and all the cabinet members. At the same time, you know, those elected parliamentarians who gather at Naypyidaw to start that new sections of the parliament, all of them were being rounded up or prevented from the way they've been staying in Naypyidaw, nearly 300 of them, I think. So they are not allowed to get out. And we heard that they will be, I think, taken to somewhere. We don't know yet.
Luen, can you kind of walk us through how the military was able to take control of the country?
Yeah, this is a kind of a strange situation. You know that military has been talking a lot about, or they have a pledge. They are pledged to defend the country constitution. So they always claim that they will defend the constitution, and then they will move, or according to the law, current constitutions provided. People believe that taking military power, staging the military coup is against the constitution anyway. But the strange Burmese constitution provided a clause that the president himself think of the country is an emergency situation and it is out of control. The president can request to through the Security Council and ask Commander-in-Chief to take the power. So this is a situation the military is creating. So instead of the military taking direct, making kind of a direct coup, somehow one of the vice presidents make himself as a temporary president. And then he called Security Council meeting, and then he transferred power to the commander-in-chief that has all the power of the country. So, and then also he declared 1 year of the national emergency period. And at the time, what he was saying is that the military wants to oversee that the process of the independent investigation process to check that or to investigate election fraud, so-called election fraud, which they claim.
Speaking of the allegations that the military has raised about last year's election, what does the Election Commission say about those allegations? And for that matter, what do domestic and international elections observers say about the way that the elections were handled?
Yeah, there's election is in November, 8 November. Is of course, it is quite free and fair according to the internal domestic observer and international observer. But since from the beginning, there's some problem about voter registration process. So when that election commissions, what I call declare or announce that register voter list, there's been a lot of irregularities. And then there's no attempt to, at the time, to what I call correct. So when that election actually happening, so the opposition parties and the army itself found that there's a lot of what I call illegal voting, what I call patterns. So they have been checking all those township and constituency, and they released what they found. So according to the military, they out of 37 million what I call eligible voter, there might be about more than 10 million. What I call election fraud and illegal voting patterns and all illegal. So they want election commission to investigate. This is what they have been calling. But the election commission was saying that no, it has been done. So they rejected a military claim to look at the situation, and then they just simply go let that winning party go ahead to call for the new parliament and possibly founding the new government.
Tan Luen Tan is the chief of the VOA Burmese service. Immigrants are referred to as aliens in U.S. laws, but the term, seen by many, is derogatory and could be replaced soon. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias spoke to those in favor and against the proposed change.
The word alien, if you say it to an American, to a citizen, it's not going to affect them because they don't know what it is to struggle with that term and the struggle to fit in, the struggle to prove yourself in the country.
Sayla Santiago was 2.5 years old when her parents left Mexico to pursue the American dream, immigrating to the U.S. She applauds President Joe Biden's proposal asking Congress to remove the word alien from immigration laws and change it to non-citizen, a more neutral term.
It's emotional because it's just, to me, it's like, why call me an alien if I belong to you? I pay your taxes. I help your people. So I definitely agree that that's something that has to be changed because it's more than just a word.
Considering it derogatory, California banned the term from its labor code in 2015. New York City started taking action last year.
We're taking out the word alien and putting non-citizen wherever there is any type of legal document or official document that comes from the city, and also in any of our city charter. We have not had any lawsuits. We haven't run into any issues.
But there is fierce opposition in U.S. conservative circles.
It's a term that's been used by many members of Congress. In fact, in a recent Supreme Court argument, the word illegal alien was used any number of times, tens of times. So I don't view it as dehumanizing. I view it as descriptive.
Laura Reese worked in the Department of Homeland Security under former President Donald Trump, who stoked anti-immigrant fervor over the last 4 years.
Under federal law, any individual in this country who is not a citizen is an alien. And if the alien is here without permission, they are here illegally. That should be the end of the story.
Changing the word alien wouldn't affect the way U.S. immigration laws work, say advocates. But it would signal that America is still a welcoming country.
There are logical and legal ways to change the terminology and make it work. The word non-citizen would actually be more inviting and reflect the way our society actually is.
And that means something. Korean Glo Choi, who recently lost a temporary visa, hopes for a path to U.S. citizenship under the more immigrant-friendly Biden administration. He says eliminating the word alien is personal.
I hope it changes people's perception of what an immigrant is. Just because you're originally from somewhere else doesn't mean you can't call a place home, and it doesn't mean that you don't belong in a place.
If the change happens, Choi says it should be followed up by laws to help those who, for reasons beyond their control, are still undocumented in the United States.
Human rights has no borders. The idea of human rights is that you're born with it. I need to be not an alien in my own home.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
Donald Trump has added two new lawyers to his impeachment defense team after losing two of his lawyers with just a week over to go before his Senate trial. AP correspondent Julie Walker has that story.
Defense lawyer David Schoen is a frequent legal commentator, and Bruce Castor is a former DA in Pennsylvania who faced criticism for not charging Bill Cosby in a 2004 sexual encounter. Trump, who had a high-profile legal team for his first impeachment trial, has struggled to hire and retain lawyers willing to represent him against charges he incited the deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol, which happened when a mob of loyalists stormed Congress as lawmakers met January 6th to certify Joe Biden's win. I'm Julie Walker.
The World Health Organization noted on Monday that globally, the number of new coronavirus cases fell for the third consecutive week. WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
For the third week in a row, the number of new cases of COVID-19 reported globally fell last week. There are still many countries with increasing numbers of cases, but at the global level, this is encouraging news.
Dr. Tedros said that it's important not to let our guard down amid signs of progress against the coronavirus.
We have been here before. Over the past year, there have been moments in almost all countries when cases declined and governments opened up too quickly and individuals let down their guard only for the virus to come roaring back.
Dr. Tedros said that as vaccines are being rolled out around the world, it's important to continue to take the precautions that are keeping people safe. He said controlling the spread of the virus saves lives now and reduces the chances of more variants emerging. Also at the briefing, WHO Emergencies Program Director Michael Ryan responded to a question regarding the WHO-led team currently studying the origins of the virus in China and early skepticism about what they may find.
As you gather more information, you get some answers, and then it creates more questions. It's a detective story, and you go through again, and you answer more questions. The fact that you have to ask a different question 2 weeks later to a different person doesn't mean that someone is holding back information. It means you haven't asked the right question yet.
The Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker currently counts nearly 103.25 million infections, more than 2.2 million deaths, and about 57.2 million recoveries. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Despite being a little more than 363,000 kilometers away, the moon exerts its influence on Earth. Most significantly, the tug of the moon's gravity is responsible for the ebb and flow of the Earth's tides. Scientists have found the moon also affects the behavior and physiology of humans and animals. A 2006 study suggests hospital and emergency room admittance are linked with phases of the moon. A new American and Argentinian study published in the journal Science Advances suggests human sleep cycles change over the 29.5-day lunar cycle. They found that several days before a full moon, people go to sleep later in the evening and slumber for shorter periods of time. Study authors also found the same results among people who live in urban and rural areas and whether or not they had access to electricity. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. A Russian court has fined Yulia Navalny, the wife of jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. Reuters' Emily Wither explains.
The wife of jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny appeared in a Russian court Monday for protesting the day before. Yulia Navalny was fined $265 for taking part in unsanctioned protests on Sunday. Addressing the court, her lawyer said they'd be appealing the decision. Yulia joined thousands of protesters across Russia, marching to call for her husband's release. Braving the bitter cold and threat of prosecution, riot police broke up the protests, detaining more than 5,300. This protester is shouting for the police to stop electroshocking him. The Kremlin spokesman on Monday labeled the demonstrators hooligans and provocateurs, telling reporters on a conference call that dialogue with such people would be impossible. Authorities had said in advance that the rallies were illegal and would be broken up. Navalny was arrested on January 17th after returning to Moscow from Germany. He had been recovering from a nerve agent poisoning in Russia last summer. He accuses President Vladimir Putin of ordering his murder, which the Kremlin denies.
Emily Wither reports for Reuters News. African entrepreneurs are creating innovations that help farmers improve their yields. In Ghana, Sese Technologies, the company behind GrainMate, allows farmers and grain purchasers to affordably measure moisture levels of maize, rice, wheat, millet, and other staples. Africa 54's Paul Ndiho spoke with Isaac Sese, the company's CEO, via Skype.
You built an incredible technology that has helped a lot of farmers across Ghana and across Africa to figure out how to manage their yields, to manage their crops. Let's start there.
Yes, we built a technology to help reduce post-harvest losses in grains among farmers. And this technology is called GrainMate, Grain Moisture Meter, which is a simple moisture meter that makes it possible for anyone that works with grains to measure the moisture content in their grains before storage so they can reduce losses. You know, just being able to know the moisture content in your grains can be the difference between your grains growing moldy and you losing all of your harvest, and you being able to store for long and reap the benefits of storing for long.
Why agriculture? There are so many other places that you could have gone, but you chose to go into agriculture.
Both my parents are farmers. You know, I have been close to the food value chain. I've been really excited about being able to grow things in the soil and seeds come up. And I have also been in the space of seeing farmers work so hard, and just something small takes away all of their produce, and then the hardship that results from that happening. And so I realized that one of the ways I could apply my knowledge and my skills in technology in a way that was fundamental to human beings is in the field of agriculture, because every one of us eats, and half of the continent is employed in agriculture, which means that if you're solving problems in agriculture, you can reach so many people and you can impact lives at a very fundamental level.
Have you been able to scale beyond Ghana?
Already we have partners that we're working with in Kenya, in Zimbabwe, in Rwanda, and in Nigeria that are going to be our partners to scale this technology in these countries. Already we have units that are in use in Zimbabwe, in Kenya, and in Rwanda. So the problems that we face, or the problems smallholder farmers face in Ghana, are similar to the problems that are faced by farmers in different parts of sub-Saharan Africa. So this is a solution that can work outside of Ghana as well as in Ghana.
When I've talked to a lot of farmers, either small-scale farmers or commercial farmers, they have a wide range of challenges that they face on a daily, day-to-day basis. How has your technology help them improve their products or get better yields at the end of a harvest season?
It's true that smallholder farmers actually face a lot of challenges. In fact, it was something that we learned while working with the World Food Program for over a period of 1 year. So we came back and then we said, what can we do to solve more problems? Because we realized that we could only make the maximum impact if we're providing a holistic solution. And then we developed a suite of post-harvest management technologies that really helps them right from the drying, threshing, storage, even to the point of marketing. And we've put all this together in a package called Farmer Pack, which we are delivering to the farmers. So we have been able to sort of solve a lot of their problems. And the exciting thing is that we're presenting this solution in a way that they can pay for. So they, instead of having to pay cash, which is one of the major barriers to the adoption of technology services, they can give us grains in exchange for the package of solutions that we are providing them. And the response and the reception has been incredible.
When it comes to funding, are you looking for potential investors from maybe people who are looking at your product and they're saying, we want to be part of this?
So we're looking for investors. We're looking to raise $500,000 to scale our production, to scale our product development and our marketing and distribution. We've been actively reaching out to investors, and our doors are also open for anybody who believes that we can partner to create value for everybody involved.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul.
And finally, February 2nd is Groundhog Day in the United States, commemorating an old European tradition, saying that if a groundhog sees his shadow, 6 more weeks of winter will follow, and if no shadow is seen, an early spring will arrive. The 1993 Hollywood comedy Groundhog Day was one of the biggest comedy hits of that year, where the protagonist endlessly repeats the same events of the titular day. But as VOA's Adam Phillips reports, people of various faiths have also found something divine to love about it as well.
Imagine waking up every day to the same day, down to the smallest detail, beginning with this tired old pop song and the same DJ blather coming out of your bedside radio alarm clock. That's what happens to Phil, Bill Murray's character in Groundhog Day. In this clip from the film, we hear Phil attempting to explain his crazy situation, without success, to Annie McDowell, who plays Rita, an attractive TV producer he'd been crassly trying to seduce, also without success.
Really? This is the third time? It's like yesterday never happened.
I'm racking my brain, but I can't even begin to imagine why you'd make up something like this.
I'm not making it up. I am asking you for help.
Okay, what do you want me to do?
I don't know. You're a producer. Come up with something.
You want my advice? I think you should get your head examined if you expect me to believe a stupid story like that, Phil.
The film chronicles Phil's feelings, reactions, and strategies as they evolve. First, his panic gives way to greed, as his foreknowledge allows him to manipulate others for selfish purposes. Since every day he wakes up to a new February 2nd, there are no lasting consequences to what he does, so he creates lots of mischief in the town. However, Phil's monetary gains are also wiped out every day, and eventually, futility and despair overwhelm him. Angela Zito finds a deep Buddhist message in all this. She teaches religion at New York University and co-directs the school's Center for Religion and Media.
The film miniaturizes the cycle of endless rebirth and reincarnation, which in Buddhist teaching, in Mahayana Buddhist teaching, is fueled by past mistakes and past errors.
So what are you supposed to do then in the Buddhist prescription a la Bill Murray?
Well, you are supposed to learn from your errors. You are supposed to change your behavior. You are supposed to become a better person, a kinder, more compassionate person, a person capable of selfless love and action.
Which is precisely what Phil ends up becoming in the story. For variety's sake, if nothing else, he begins to use his special knowledge to help people. Phil discovers that compassion feels good, even blissful. And this, according to Ms. Zito, permits Phil finally to break free.
We do see him finally reach a form of enlightenment, February 3rd, as it were.
But there's also a distinctly Christian ethic at work in Groundhog Day, according to James Martin, a Catholic priest and author.
There's a great line in the Gospels which said, I no longer live, but Christ lives within me. Now, I doubt that Bill Murray's character would say that exactly in the movie, but there is a sense of his awakening to a new way and a new form of life. In a sense, a resurrection. For example, in the movie, you could say that Bill Murray's sense of egoism had to die. His sense of sort of entitlement, which you get in the beginning of the movie. So there's this sense of reawakening, which I think is a very Christian message.
Not all the wisdom to be found in this comedy has a religious spin. In fact, Harold Ramis, who co-wrote and directed the film, reports that many psychoanalysts see Groundhog Day as a metaphor for therapy, where one repeats one's story until new paths are chosen. He feels that Phil's triumph is in creating his own road to ultimate happiness.
Well, here's a character who finds himself in a situation he can't explain, which is much like life. You know, we can fabricate explanations, but they don't really explain, you know, in the biggest sense. You know, why am I who I am? Why do the things happen to me? That's the journey that Bill's character goes on. But there's no God to tell him what's happening. There's no angel to come down and explain it all. You know, here's the point, here's the message, here's the meaning.
Call it Hollywood or call it profound, Phil also discovers how true selflessness can have a better payback. And he does get the girl. Finding inner bliss, the adoration of one's community, and someone to spend Saturday nights with for life, it's an ending most of us wouldn't mind experiencing again and again and again this Groundhog Day. This is Adam Phillips reporting.
And this has been International Edition on The Voice of America. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States, along with the G7 foreign ministers of Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United Kingdom, and the High Representative of the European Union, are united in condemning the politically motivated arrest and detention of prominent Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. The G7 foreign ministers called for the immediate and unconditional release of Mr. Navalny, who was arrested shortly after his return to Russia from Germany. In a written statement, the G7 members also expressed deep concern over the detention of thousands of peaceful protesters and journalists, and called upon Russia to adhere to its national and international obligations and release those detained arbitrarily for exercising their right of peaceful assembly on January 23rd. The violent suppression by police forces of the right of individuals to express their opinion is unacceptable. These events confirm a continuous negative pattern of shrinking space for the opposition, civil society, human rights defenders, and independent voices in Russia, said the G7 statement. Mr. Navalny was nearly killed in August 2020 in an assassination attempt using a nerve agent of the Novichok Group, a chemical weapon developed by the Soviet Union. The G7 foreign ministers reiterated that any use of chemical weapons is unacceptable and contravenes international norms against the use of such weapons. We again urge the Russian authorities to investigate and credibly explain the use of a chemical weapon on its soil in the light of Russia's obligations under the Chemical Weapons Convention. The use of chemical weapons against an opposition politician, as well as Mr. Navalny's latest detention, further undermine democracy, independent voices, and political plurality in Russia. The G7 urged Russia to fulfill its obligations under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and to guarantee the rights it sets forth, including the right to freedom of expression, to all individuals within its territory and jurisdiction. The United States and its G7 partners remain strongly committed to the Chemical Weapons Convention and to our support for democracy, the rule of law, and human rights in Russia, as well as to bolstering our support to Russian civil society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.